If you're not taking a statin, maybe you should be.
Treating atrial fibrillation after heart surgery.
What about screening for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease?
And what happens when fresh fruit becomes Chinese food?
That's what we're talking about this week on PodMed, the weekly look at the medical headlines from Johns Hopkins, posted on April 8th, 2016. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang, professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins, president of the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, El Paso, and dean of the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine.
And amazingly clever as always, so naturally, we're going to turn to the New England Journal of Medicine. Is fresh fruit Chinese food? That was really good, Rick.
Well, I actually thought this was an interesting article, and it's one that you chose to talk about today. You know, in the Western world, we know that a higher level of fruit consumption has been associated with a lower risk of cardiovascular disease, but not much is known about the same in the Chinese culture. And in fact, fresh fruit consumption is actually pretty low in that culture. So between 2004 and 2008, they recruited 500,000 adults from 10 different locations in China, about 3.2 million person years. So this is a large study. And what they reported was when they looked at the 18% of participants who consumed fresh fruit daily, and they compared them to individuals that did not eat fresh fruit, what they found is that those who did consume daily fresh fruit had about a 35% lower risk of cardiovascular death, stroke, and heart events. It appears that there was a reduction in blood pressure and a reduction in sugar, but interestingly enough, an increase in weight and an increase in waist circumference. This suggests that there's an independent relationship between fresh fruit consumption and decreased mortality.
I wonder about variations in disease risk and diet and so forth for different ethnic groups. And I wonder if we would see something different if we looked at a Caucasian population or an African American population.
Well, what I can tell you is that in the Western Hemisphere, fresh fruit consumption is associated with decreased cardiovascular disease, but it was magnified in these Chinese patients, probably because their baseline fresh fruit consumption is pretty low. But I think you're right. There is a relationship, and it's been shown not only in China, but now in the Western Hemisphere as well.
Right, I get that, but I still wonder about the specific impact. And so I'll call to mind for you another example of this. So we know that African Americans are much more likely to be salt intolerant with regard to hypertension. And we could probably dredge up a number of examples like that. So I'm just wondering, in the Chinese or the Asian population, is there a propensity toward greater impact of fresh fruit consumption in spite of this central obesity that you mentioned?
There very well may be racial variations with respect to diet and how it affects health outcomes. One has to remember, though, that we're not only talking about fruit, we're talking about vegetables and other things. What do these substitute for, or what are the things that are in the diet? For example, in the Chinese diet, very high vegetable consumption, just very low fruit consumption. You might hypothesize that since they eat a lot of vegetables, the addition of fruits wouldn't be helpful, but this shows that it is. So I think your question's interesting, and it'd be nice to, for example, to study this in an African population, either in Africa and out of Africa as well.
Exactly. I just think it brings up a lot of interesting stuff. Since we're in the New England Journal of Medicine, then why don't we turn to the one I served up as, if you aren't taking a statin, maybe you should be.
This was a very large study called the HOPE 3 trial, and it centered around two things: people that did not have cardiovascular disease but were at intermediate risk of developing it. The risk was about 1% per year. They randomized these individuals to a statin to lower their cholesterol, or to blood pressure medications to lower their blood pressure, or to the combination of both, or to placebo. This is a very large study, over 12,000 individuals, in fact, almost 13,000 individuals in it. And in short, over the course of 5 years, putting them on a modest amount of blood pressure medications did not reduce the risk of having cardiovascular disease. However, the use of a statin, rosuvastatin, 10 milligrams daily, did decrease the risk of having the combination of cardiovascular disease, including heart attacks, non-fatal strokes, cardiovascular death, by about 25%.
25%. This is sort of an interesting thing too, isn't it, Rick? Because, gosh, does this mean that your risk and my risk is really low? Are we going to start taking a statin? We've quipped about this before, you know, should we put these things in municipal water supplies?
And in fact, you could very well make the case, well, the risk goes from 1% per year to 0.75% per year. And is that a meaningful risk reduction? So on a population basis, that requires a cost-benefit analysis. Does the cost of taking statins and the associated side effects, is it worth the modest decrease? And I think most people would argue it is, because the benefits we're talking about are serious diseases, cardiovascular death, strokes, and heart attacks. So I think in the end, when one does the analysis, it probably will be beneficial.
I wonder, it's a hard sell. So if I said this to you right now, hey, Rick, you've got this really intermediate, and it's low intermediate, but intermediate risk just based on your age, but not on a lot of other factors, would you consider taking a statin?
I would. The other thing I'd say is I would do so if I was able to do so without side effects. But for the individual that has side effects, you have to allow them to weigh the risk-benefit ratio for them. The other thing I want to add, by the way, because we talked about the modest blood pressure lowering did not help. It didn't help in two-thirds of the patients, but it did help in the third that had the highest blood pressure. The systolic blood pressure was over about 145, the upper number. So in that group, even modest blood pressure lowering was additive to the benefit of a statin.
I think it's a complex situation. And of course, you didn't ask me if I would take a statin.
I was about to. So would you, Elizabeth?
No. And we'll talk later about that. In any case, let's remain in the New England Journal of Medicine and complete our survey in this journal this week with atrial fibrillation following heart surgery.
And the reason why I picked this particular article is that this irregular rhythm remains the most common complication after heart surgery. Somewhere between 20 and 50% of individuals that have had either bypass surgery or valve surgery or both will develop atrial fibrillation. While it's not considered to be life-threatening, it is associated with an increased risk of stroke, thromboembolic disease, a longer hospital stay, and a slightly increased risk of death. If someone develops atrial fibrillation, do you put them on medications just to lower their heart rate, or do you put them on medications, antiarrhythmic agents, to try to convert them from that irregular rhythm, except those medications are associated with side effects. So what this study did was it looked at a group of individuals that were undergoing heart surgery. There were over 2,100 patients, and it looked at those that were having atrial fibrillation, and that was about a third of the patients. And they enrolled most of those to either just to lower their heart rate or to put them back into a regular rhythm. Which of them had the shorter hospital stay, and which of them were more likely to suffer from complications? And it's interesting, with either therapy, the hospital stay was the same. There was no advantage of one over the other. The risk of having a stroke or having a complication was about the same for either. And about a fourth couldn't tolerate the therapy, and they were switched over to the other side. That tells me that either could be applied, and if the patient can't tolerate it, they can be switched to the other.
It also points to the need, of course, for some better strategy for either preventing this secondary to surgery or developing an agent or strategy that will help treat it.
And even though we have done a better job of lowering the risk of it, we haven't completely prevented it. The nice thing is it's usually transient. After the heart surgery, your heart's a little bit irritated. This rhythm occurs again in about a third of individuals.
I'm sure we're going to see more about this later. Finally, then, let's turn to the Journal of the American Medical Association, Screening for Chronic Obstructive Pulmonary Disease, or COPD.
We try to promote screening that will be beneficial. We try to avoid screening that's not helpful. In many places around the United States, as a part of the routine annual examination, are lung tests, or breathing tests. And that's to assess whether someone has emphysema, or what's called chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And what the USPSTF did, the United States Preventive Services Task Force, is they evaluated all the data since their last recommendation in 2008 and asked some simple questions. In someone who's asymptomatic, they don't have any respiratory symptoms, is the screening helpful? And what they determined was, in asymptomatic individuals, regardless of whether they're smokers or not, routine screening isn't beneficial. And those with mild or moderate COPD, or even severe that are asymptomatic, they don't get put on therapy, because our therapy doesn't prolong their survival, it just treats symptoms. And if the patient doesn't have symptoms, you wouldn't put them on therapy. Identifying these individuals, even if you're able to do so, doesn't improve their long-term outcome. So what the task force recommends is not doing routine screening in individuals that don't have symptoms.
Wow, it's sort of a little daunting though, isn't it? Because as you're well aware, COPD, of course, kind of gaining ascendancy with regard to prominence and also causes of death. So since it is important in those regards, I just am wondering, but we're not going to screen for it. We're not going to identify those folks.
The current treatment we have it only improves symptoms. So if the person doesn't have symptoms, you can't possibly give them the medication to make them feel better. If we ever get to the point where we have a therapy that improves survival or decreases the progression of the disease, then screening might be beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Point well taken. Of course, this gives me the moment to editorialize. The vast majority of this condition, of course, entirely eliminated if people don't smoke.
Not all, but the vast majority of COPD is associated with either first-hand or second-hand smoke. And that's the reason to ask every time a healthcare provider sees an individual is to ask them whether they're smoking or not.
Right, or even exposed to it. On that note, of course, I'm going to talk about the fresh fruits in China this week on the blog. That's a look at this week's medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang. Y'all live well.